WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. Sidney Lumet, A Life, is a new book about the director of the now classic films 12 Angry Men, Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon, and Network. It's also the story of a New York kid who grew up on the Lower East Side. The first part of the book reveals so much about his personal life as a young boy who worked in the Yiddish theater, a child of immigrants who didn't quite attain the American dream they'd hoped for. It also traces his time in the Army, his penchant for getting married four times, and of course his work as a director who sought authenticity in his work. Maura Spiegel, who teaches literature and film at Columbia University, wrote Sidney Lumet, A Life, and she is in studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So why Sidney Lumet? Why him for a biography?
Yeah. Well, I guess my own New York roots had a big, you know, a lot to do with it. And I watching his movies growing up, I felt somehow that they were so familiar to me. Like I felt almost like someone in my family was telling those stories. They were the New York characters that he captured, just people who work in bureaucratic situations who have so much color and life in them and are so complex. And I just loved them, and I wondered why I was so connected to them. And then I started reading about him, and I found out we had all these kind of connections in our past, and I got really interested in his life.
It's so interesting in the book as you read it. There's so much about New York. It's like a little bit of a tour guide to New York. There are exact locations of where he lived with his first wife on 15th Street and what schools he went to on the Lower East Side. When you think about it, how did his growing up in New York City influence his work as a director?
Yeah, well, I think two ways, I would say. One is that he really always lived a kind of double existence. He was a child performing on the Yiddish stage, which at that time was really very grand, also doing Yiddish radio, and then going off on the subway and taking himself to school with very little money. He became the primary support for his family. So part of it was this doubleness of his experience of being just a kid on the street and also having this kind of New York glamour, that, you know, that combination, I was so interested in that. And he really had that all through his life, I think, this kind of funny combination of the most ordinary experiences that he loved to tell, you know, ordinary experiences that are extraordinary, and then this kind of high life that he led, you know, in his private life.
That reminds me of something that's in the book that's, he had actors, I think it was in Dog Day Afternoon, wear street clothes.
Yeah.
So they're making this big, expensive movie with these big stars, but he's telling the people to wear their clothes because he wants it to, their street clothes, because he wants it to be so authentic. It's that that duality you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And he also, you know, used neon lights, like he used regular lights in the bank. I mean, he worked so hard to get that feeling of the real in that film. I mean, it seems, on, you know, common sense wise, like trying to make something feel real should be easy, but actually it's tremendously complicated.
My guest is Maura Spiegel. The name of the book is Sidney Lumet, A Life. Let's go back to the beginning. You mentioned he started his career as a child actor in Yiddish theater. How did he get involved with Yiddish theater?
Yeah, well, his father was a Yiddish actor who came to the United States. And interestingly, the Yiddish theater really was more, sort of successful and settled in New York than it was anywhere else, even though it's coming from Eastern Europe. And so he knew that there was great stuff happening here. And it really was. I mean, there were huge theaters on Second Avenue. I mean, theaters that held 5,000 people. And people would spend half of their weekly salary to go see one of these shows. So it was an incredibly lively world. His father made a radio show, 15 minutes a day. It was a soap opera about an he played a Jewish grandfather, and Sidney played the little grandson, even when he was 4 years old. So basically, this was the world Sidney was born into, and he was just took to it in this freaky way. I mean, he was his father would tell stories about how he would recite the whole play after after a performance. He memorized the entire play.
So his father's name is Baruch, and his mother was Jenny. How would you describe their relationship?
Yeah, terrible word. Jenny was came from an affluent and very learned family in Warsaw. She fell in love, I guess, with this handsome actor. Baruch was quite a handsome young man. And she followed him. You know, he came first to the United States, as was not unusual. And then she came with her child, the first child, Sidney's older sister, Faye. And the adjustment to poverty and to, she had nursemaids to take care of her baby, and suddenly she is all on her own. And she developed really some very serious mental illness. And Baruch was not a good partner for someone with that kind of problem.
I'm wondering, was Sidney close to his mother? Because Sidney's daughter's name is Jenny.
Yeah. I think his mother was a source of enormous pain in his life, throughout his life, and she tragically died giving birth. Both the baby and she died. Sidney was a teenager. The family then just completely broke apart. I think the pain connected to his mother was something he really never could speak about.
You write in the book, though, the theater probably saved his life. How so?
Yeah. Well, he loved the vitality of the theater world, and it was his first. I mean, throughout his life, he loved actors. I mean, he just thought they were the most wonderful people. But this sort of community that would form and took in this little bright boy, and he was so curious about everything that was going on, like these, complicated sets that he would watch them put them together and how they handled the, funds. He just was interested in all of it. And I think it really provided a kind of second home for him, especially when he got involved with the group theater, which was, a remarkable American phenomenon of actors coming together, very politically committed, developing what would become really the method acting that was so important to his work. And they had this kind of summer retreat that they invited him on, and they were all fighting with each other by everybody else's account, but from Sidney's perspective, it was divine.
It was glorious. Why didn't Sidney Lumet pursue acting? Why didn't he become an actor as an adult?
Yeah, great question. He loved acting on the stage, but when he did his first film, he really didn't like what the camera saw. He felt very exposed. He also hadn't been trained at that point, so his performance is pretty kind of crude. I think the sense he's always said that all great acting is self-revelation, and he felt that he couldn't reveal himself that much. And I think it goes back to the pain that you mentioned, in relation to his mother and this idea of exposing his, himself in that way. He also didn't grow up. He was a very beautiful child. He went off to fight in the war World War II. Mm-hmm. He was gone for 5 years. When he came back, he hadn't grown much. He had glasses on. He hadn't become the handsome man that this child really predicted.
My guest is Maura Spiegel. We're talking about her new biography of Sidney Lumet. It's called Sidney Lumet, A Life. He married his first wife, Rita, in 1949. Who was Rita? Rita Gam.
Yeah, she's adorable. She was so...
Yes, I have to admit, I did go to look her up online.
She's a real... I met her, she was 80. She was still beautiful, you know, and so charming. She was a starlet. She was... acting, he met her. She was performing with him on a play right after the war. She was in a trouser part, so she was playing a man. She ended up really getting attracted to Hollywood, and he wanted to stay in New York. And there was a lot of tension between the theater world and the Hollywood world, and there was a lot of contempt for Hollywood. So it pulled them apart, but the way that she told it to me was really the problem was that she cheated on him, and she didn't know any better than to tell him, and he just walked out. He couldn't take that.
As I mentioned, he was married 4 times to Rita Gam, Gloria Vanderbilt, Gail Jones, who is Lena Horne's daughter, and the 4th marriage is escaping me.
Piedy Gimble. She was, yeah.
Was he a romantic, or was he just a man who was unlucky at love?
Most of his friends said he was that kind of man who has to be married, you know, like he just has to be married. I asked Rita if he was a romantic, and she said, her answer surprised me, she said, no, he was kind of more like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. But I think, you know, each of his marriages was longer. And each of them is a really fascinating story, as you can imagine. These remarkable women, and I think really the last marriage, which was 31 years. I mean, people describe that one as the real marriage. So, he was exploring, as was Gloria Vanderbilt, was exploring and trying to figure out who she was, and you know, they could do it. They could divorce, and they could go to the next thing.
My guest is Maura Spiegel. We're talking about her new biography of Sidney Lumet. So he started in TV and then went to film, 12 Angry Men, being his first one that he transitioned. How did that come about? How did he make the jump from television to film?
Yeah.
Especially in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, the person who wrote 12 Angry Men was a good friend of his and had been writing for television. In fact, 12 Angry Men started its life as a television show on live television. And they were friends, and it turned out that Henry Fonda saw the TV show and loved it and thought, I want to make a movie. He'd never produced a movie, but he wanted that movie. And the author of the play at that point, TV play, said, Sidney. And it turned out that Henry Fonda had seen something Sidney directed off-Broadway, and it all worked out very well. And it didn't even occur to him that it was a challenge to make a film in one room. He was so used to making television where they were working in the most crazy, cramped, you know, situation.
But yeah, Fonda wasn't that excited about that, though.
Yeah.
While Sidney Lumet, he brought it under budget and a short time frame. Fonda thought it looked ugly. He wasn't sure he was that happy with the end product.
He hated the set. Which was, they had sort of a cheap painting of the city. Mm-hmm. And Sidney said, no, the lighting will take care of it. And Fonda was skeptical. But at the end, Fonda loved and was very proud of his performance in it.
It was critically acclaimed, and we think of it as being a classic, but it didn't do well financially.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a hit.
No. Well, the way that they promoted it was insane. They put it in a giant theater, you know, like it was a, you know, musical or something. The ads made it sound like it was a horror movie. I mean, it was just a very peculiar way in which they promoted the film. It flopped.
He directed Serpico, Prince of the City, The Verdict. We're getting a theme here. Courtrooms.
Yes.
What was he drawn to? Why was he excited about that as a filmmaker?
Yeah. I think there's a few things, but one of them is, you know, there's a tremendous amount of drama in those situations, especially in the courtroom. But I think he he was always mindful somehow, and I'm not sure why, of what people now talk about as moral injury, the ways in which people feel deeply compromised often in the work that they do, and they feel sort of that the work that they're doing, I mean, if you look at Serpico and Prince of the City and The Verdict, I mean, people doing work that is, they believe in, but in fact is, you know, corrupt. And he was quite interested in that.
You write in the book that his adaptation of Long Day's Journey and Tonight remains his proudest achievement throughout his career. Why?
Well, he was so thrilled with Katharine Hepburn's performance, for one thing, and it is remarkable. And he also worked really hard on the camera work. And people complained at the time that he didn't, you know, do what people often did with play adaptations, which was open it up and create many scenes with outside, you know, and he kept it close. But the work he did with the camera and the lighting each character differently, holding the angles on them differently, and the evolution of the lighting through the play, he just felt like he'd really done what he meant to do, yeah.
In his obituary in the New York Times, he was described as, Sidney Lumet was described as, one of the last of the great movie moralists and a leading purveyor of the social issue movie. Did he believe that you could affect social change through film?
It's so funny because, you know, whenever he was asked that question, he gave a different answer. And he often said, no, movies change nothing, and I do it because I love it. But clearly, he's captivated by these problems, and he doesn't come up with easy solutions. The it's not the kind of social problem film that ends with we've solved the problem and hooray, we can celebrate. They're not solvable problems. He's fascinated by, as I say, these complex webs that we try to conduct our lives in and seek integrity in some way. We're looking for some integrity, and it's not so easy to achieve.
A lot of people, especially film writers, know his book, Making Movies. And you reference an unfinished memoir. He was working on his own memoir. What happened to it?
He stopped writing. It was just too painful. He got he didn't get past his 20s. It's interesting, his approach to writing his memoir. It's more like a confession. He's so hard on himself. And I think he was shocked at all the painful memories that came up and didn't know how, like many artists, it's hard to talk about yourself. Easier to tell things about your life through other people's stories, you know?
You're a professor of literature and film. What movie should someone see who's never seen a Sidney Lumet film?
Well, I guess I would say Dog Day Afternoon, which is, I think, you know, a true masterpiece. But there are many wonderful, wonderful films. I mean, people are blown away by The Verdict. I think the film Daniel, which unfortunately never got the attention it should have, is extremely moving film. Prince of the City is, many, many films. There's also some funny ones that don't. Find Me Guilty, which was one of his last films, and his last film, which was Before the Devil Knows You're Dead with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke. I mean, it's a really powerful film.
The name of the book is Sidney Lumet, A Life. It is by Maura Spiegel. Maura, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.